From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. And it's time now for our weekly technology segment, All Tech Considered. Joining me, as always, is our tech guru, Omar Gayaga. Hello, Omar.
Hi, Robert. Great to be here.
And as people will have already noticed, you sound a little bit different. That's because when we usually talk, I'm in Washington, you're in Austin, Texas, so I can't see you. But right now, I'm looking at you, all 2 inches of you, thanks to a laptop computer that I have here with a web camera.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring you back at better audio quality right now.
Hello, Robert. How are you doing today?
I was looking at you. We're talking about webcams. Last Monday, we asked people to go to our blog and tell us how they use technology, specifically web cameras, to stay in touch with long-distance friends and family.
Right. On the All Tech Considered community site, we got almost 100 responses from people about how they're using webcams and how they're communicating with loved ones all over the country, overseas. We just heard some really amazing stories about how people are harnessing this cheap, readily available technology and really keeping in touch with everyone.
Yeah, and it reminded me of a personal story involving fairly low to middle tech. When I was working and living in London with my wife and two daughters, we were 3,000 miles from their grandparents. Transatlantic phone calls were very expensive, so we used an audio cassette machine, and we sent tapes back to the grandparents. I still have them. Here's an example, Omar.
Leah said she would like to tell you about, well, what she calls the tooth news. She says that she's got 4 new teeth growing back, and he wants to tell you a bit about them.
Lee, you want to tell us more about these teeth?
Do they hurt?
A little bit.
So, you see, the test for me of what we're doing here is our means of communication from long distance good enough that it leaves a record with which you can embarrass your children when they grow up by hearing their funny accents when they're 2 years old?
You would hope so, yeah. I mean, you can keep a lot of this stuff as audio files or video files, and you know, that's a big problem is where are we going to store all this stuff, but hopefully there'll be better ways to organize all this information and keep it safe somewhere.
Okay, in a moment we'll talk about just how easy or inexpensive, or maybe for some of us not so easy it is to install a webcam. But first, we did, as you said, hear from listeners, and we called up a few of them who wrote to us, and we asked them to record their webcam stories. Let's listen.
My name is Rhonda Herring. I live in Hot Springs, Arkansas. My daughter became seriously ill about 2 years ago. We ended up spending a very extended period of time in and out of the hospital. My mother missed us. We missed her. And telephone calls just didn't quite make it. For one thing, it's really difficult to get telephone calls when you're sitting in ICU. But through my webcam, mother could look at Catherine in her hospital bed. She could see the equipment. She could see that Catherine was sleeping comfortably. She could see when she woke up and smiled for that first time. And it made my daughter and I feel as if we weren't in this medical nightmare completely by ourselves, and helped mother feel that she was being a part of what was going on with us.
My name is Katie Butte, and I live in Ogden, Utah. And my husband is currently deployed in Afghanistan. A couple months ago, I received an email from him telling me that his base had been attacked. I was really worried, and even though he told me that he was okay, it was really hard for me to believe him. Like, I needed to see that he was safe. And so the next night, he was able to call me using Skype. And the second I saw him, I just started crying when I saw him on the webcam. And I just had this feeling of relief wash over my body, because there's just something amazing about being able to see him and know that he was not harmed. For a brief moment, I felt like I was with him again during a really difficult time.
I'm Sarah Adams, and I'm 64 years old, and I teach high school mathematics in Long Beach, California.
My name is Castle Adams Unger, and I'm 7 years old, and I live in Hong Kong.
My granddaughter wanted a fancy dress for a school concert, and so I went shopping at a local store and sent them via U.S. Post Office mail.
The first one I tried on was, like, black on the top. The other one was a green one with sparkles.
She said, "Would you like to see me with them on?" And I said, "Sure, that'd be great." So she put on each of the dresses and came and modeled them for me.
It's like talking to a little person thing that has the same voice and head as your grandma or your papa.
It's the best thing short of a supersonic jet getting me there in person with him.
That was Rachel Adams and her granddaughter, Kestrel Adams Unger. We also heard Katie Butte and Rhonda Herring, just some of the many listeners who wrote to us with their webcam stories. I'm back with Omar Gayaga. And Omar, I have to confess, I did not find installing a webcam to be easy and in the end not worth it. And also, as Kestrel put it there, it's like talking to a little person thing who has a recognizable voice. You know, we're not talking ready for your close-up Omar Gayaga here. It's a fairly crude image.
It depends. I mean, there are some cameras that are much higher end that go up to about $100 that are, you know, near HD quality. If you have a really good internet connection on both ends, you're going to get a much higher quality video. It's going to be much more lifelike.
I've been hearing about video telephone calls of one kind or another as being in the future since I was a little kid. This is the closest we've ever been to it, but we're in a big economic downturn. Is this something that people are going to be able to afford to do and to become very common nowadays?
Well, given the fact that you can find a webcam to add on to a PC for as little as $7 to $10, I did a cursory look at Amazon.com and found several webcams that, you know, are just fine as far as quality and under $10. So just adding one on to a PC, downloading free software like Skype, or AOL Instant Messenger, even Google Talk now does video. All of these programs are free, and the webcam is cheap, so it is the next best thing to having a video phone, and you can do it really on the cheap yourself.
So this is much more useful as a family-to-family or friend-to-friend arranged method of communication. You can't just go around cold calling strangers this way.
Well, actually, there's a lot of websites, communities that have kind of built around the idea of webcams. There's a site called Seesmic, that's S-E-E-S-M-I-C, where people record short messages to each other and have a conversation back and forth over their webcams. Some of these sites like Quik.com, that's Q-I-K.com, allow you to do live broadcasting. So you can actually have your own little live TV show going on the web, and people can be commenting and chatting with you as you are broadcasting.
Omar Gayaga, who covers technology culture for the Austin American Statesman. Thanks a lot, Omar.
Thank you, Robert. It was good to see you.
Good to see you this week. Next week, we'll be back to sound only, and we're going to offer up an all-tech-considered tech gift guide for the holidays, and we'd like to know what you'd like to know. The best way to reach us is through our blog at npr.org/alltech. If you didn't have a pen handy for my chat today with Omar, just go to the blog where he posted all of his notes. Again, npr.org/alltech. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Newspapers that so often tell us what's happening face a question about what will happen to them.
That question took me to New York City, where two of the nation's biggest papers are on sale at any newsstand. Consider this newsstand, which is within sight of New York's Times Square. Amid the magazines and the tabloids for sale, you can see the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Today and tomorrow, we're going to meet the editors of those influential national papers. They're leaders of an industry that's said to be dying. We went around the corner to the skyscraper that is home of the New York Times, and we found the editor, Bill Keller, in a glass-walled office.
I just wonder, if you were going to write the headline for this institution at this moment in time, what would it be?
We will survive.
Bill Keller edits one of the world's most influential newspapers. His reporters' triumphs and their failures shaped what we learned about the Bush administration, from eavesdropping to weapons of mass destruction. Now they prepare to cover a new administration in uncertain times. When we met Bill Keller, the newspaper was about to announce plans to borrow against its own building. The company wants to avoid a cash flow problem.
Yeah, it's this amazing period of ferment, which is sometimes disheartening because, you know, people are nibbling away at our core business. But in fact, our audience is growing, you know, people coming to our website. We had 1 billion page views in October and a printed newspaper that is still profitable all by itself. So I don't think we're losing audience, but we're competing for audience with different people.
When you point out you've still got a print edition that makes money, and you've got millions of new web viewers that you never had before, what would make people be concerned about the future of this institution?
Well, to some extent, we get tarred with the condition of the industry that we're in.
Do you mean your stock has been hammered just because you're a newspaper generically? People aren't actually looking at the real fundamentals of your business?
I think that's a lot of it. But no, I absolutely think they're looking at the fundamentals of the business we're in. I think our fundamentals as a company are stronger than those of most other companies.
Why? Just because of the name? Because you are the New York Times?
Well, it's because the name stands for something. I think the term of art the business people use is brand promise, and I think our brand promise is high and strong. I mean, good journalism does not come cheap, and therefore you're not going to find a lot of blogs or nonprofit websites that are going to build the Baghdad Bureau. It's the basic law of supply and demand. There is demonstrably a huge demand for what we do, which is why people keep coming to our website and paying $500 a year for the newspaper. But there's a real shortage of the kind of information that I would call quality journalism.
Really? Are there fewer journalists doing
the work? There are fewer employed
in...
journalists. which goes back to when I was growing up, an awful lot of cities had two newspapers that battled it out. It's been a long time since that was the case. Now you find newsrooms around the country hollowing themselves out. A fair number of those newspapers are going to die, and they will be supplanted by something, a local website. I mean, I don't think that Americans want to go without news. They want somebody to tell them what's happening at the local city council, not just what's happening in the world at large.
Setting aside the business for a moment, I'd like to know if, given the huge number of ways that people communicate, if you feel that this newspaper is as relevant to politicians and to the public as it was.
I do, although I think it's relevant in a different way and on a different cycle. It used to be that a New York Times story out of Washington would set the agenda for the network news for days to come and for the Sunday talk shows and probably for the News Weekly magazine covers the following week. Now the news cycles through in about 36 hours instead of a week. And politicians have a lot more places they can go to communicate with the electorate. And I don't know what the new administration is going to do in that regard.
How would you say that the new administration, judged on how President-elect Obama ran his campaign, dealt with the media or dealt with this paper?
He ran an unbelievably disciplined campaign, and some of that discipline and message control will probably translate into governing. But you can't just govern by communicating with your base. And I think the Bush administration has demonstrated that that's true. And I think the Obama people are smart enough to know that.
Have you found them particularly open or cooperative?
I think the reporters who covered the campaign would say that it was quite buttoned down. One of the things that seems to have worked extremely well for the Obama campaign was the whole social networking phenomenon, which was great for raising money, which was great for mobilizing their people. But again, that's something that works to mobilize your base. You need more than your base to govern. And even your most devoted admirers don't want to rely just on you for word of what the government's up to and what it means.
Bill Keller is executive editor of the New York Times. On top of websites and TV channels, the newspaper now faces a new challenge from another newspaper. And tomorrow we'll meet Robert Thompson, the editor of that paper, The Wall Street Journal.
If you look at other newspapers in New York that aspire to cover international affairs, it's sort of a roving searchlight. When they focus it on a country, that country is important, but that's not really how the world works.
Would you say with a wry smile, other papers in New York that aspire to cover news, the New York Times would be one of those newspapers, wouldn't it?
Well, that is one that comes to mind, yes.